You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Cincha Orsi. Cincha, it's good to have you here.
Thank you, Eric. No, it's my pleasure. I'm delighted to be here. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Good, thank you. And you know how the show begins. We begin with a huge question. Who are you? What do we need to know to start this conversation about the broad strokes, the commitments, the values that you hold or aspire to?
That is a big question. And it is, and I appreciate, because it just took me to a whole journey of life, because I think who I am, part of knowing me is knowing my life story and where I come from, but also my personality. And I'm very energetic, enthusiastic, and always been drawn to the complexity of things. So the complexity of nature, of people, of life, of systems, so everything that's complex. It's interesting how I really, my eyes go there. And now I'm in this time where I'm learning about the disposition of the heart, which it leaves, I think, that understanding of the self and the mind to the understanding of the self and the heart, which it's inevitable. It has to be with others. It has to be with God. It's in that triangulation, that it's a beautiful journey. Okay, who I am? I don't know. I'm still learning this process.
And did you want to just give us a quick sketch of where you're from?
Yeah. That is always a puzzle. That's actually my question when I just meet someone. I say, okay, where do you guess where I'm from? Nobody gets right. So I'm from Brazil, born in Brazil, but I'm descended from Japanese immigrants that moved to Brazil. Part of one of the family, it's between wars, and the second part of the family after the second war. My grandma was actually a Hiroshima survivor. She wasn't in the bomb in Hiroshima. And the family moved to Brazil and started a new life there, not speaking any Portuguese. And we're so grateful God has shown them the path. My dad and my uncles, they've all been educated in Brazil, in Portuguese, with all the difficulties of the culture. And we also had good education throughout the years. And we were born, and we used to live in the suburbs of São Paulo. So I don't know if everybody knows, but São Paulo is a big city.
One of the largest in the world.
Yeah, very complex city. And I've been raised in, you know, with all the diversity that there is, not just about people, but also about social economic situation. So even, you know, living in a place and studying in another place, you know, with different classes, like monetary families. And so it's an interesting background.
Yes, very, very much so. So, Cincha, you brought with you some music. What would you like to open the show with?
I'd like to open with I Smile by Kirk Franklin.
I dedicate this song to recession, depression, and unemployment. This song's for you.
Today's a new day. There is no sunshine, nothing but clouds, and it's dark in my heart, and it feels like a cold night. Today's a new day, but where are my blue skies? Where is the love and the joy that you promised me? Tell me it's all right.
I'll be honest with you.
I almost gave up, but a power that I can't explain.
When I think how much better I'm gonna be when this is over.
I smile, even though I hurt, see I smile. I know God is working, so I smile. Even though
you do?
I smile.
Come on and
smile. It's so hard to look up when you've been down. Sure would hate to see you give up now.
God's people.
You look so much better when you smile. So smile.
Now every day ain't gonna be perfect, but it still don't mean today don't have purpose. Come on.
Today's a new day. There is no sunshine, nothing but clouds, and it's dark in my heart, and it feels like a cold night.
It ain't easy, bud.
Today's a new day, but tell me, where are my blue skies?
Where is that love, y'all?
Where is the love and the joy that you promised me? Tell me it's all right.
The truth is,
I almost gave up.
It goes power, y'all.
Fell from heaven like a shower down.
Now I know we've been hurt, y'all, but still
I smile.
Come on.
Even though I hurt, see, I smile.
Y'all feel that?
I know God is working, so I smile. Even though I've been here for a while,
still
I smile.
Hallelujah.
I smile. It's so hard to look up when you've been down. Sure would hate to see you give up now.
God's people. You're in right now.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Cincha Orsi. So Cincha, the question I'd like to go to next is, given the life that you value now, what did you have to go through to learn how to live it? What are some of the experiences that you had to go through to know what to do, to know what to look for, to know how to show up in this world?
Thank you. I appreciate this question. And actually, I kind of relate with the song as well, because it is going through the hard times, the struggles, that we really learn things in life, and learning to smile, to be grateful after all that we've been through, and knowing that, yeah, that's been part of who I am. It's part of who I am right now, and it's beautiful. So perhaps like the one thing that really, the first thing that I remember changed the whole thing, the whole way I see life, my way of thinking of life, from the selfishness, the drive, you know, like to excel.
And accomplish things, sure.
Accomplishment, yeah, I was so proud of that. And that's part of who I am as well. But I've seen, now I see differently. So it's you're just getting into college and starting. And now my husband and I, we were dating and we got pregnant. And we were in college. That was a big, now what? What's going to happen? Right. So it's almost, yeah, we had to learn to depend. We had to learn, you know, at the peak of independence saying, oh, wow, we're finally out of home, you know, parents' house and you know, can do, you know, follow our own directions, learning. Well, there's more than that. There's God's direction above all. Right. And so that's a big learning. And I think we've carried all that. But not just me, but my husband and with the family, you know, understanding, yeah, that our life, it's communal, it's not alone, and seeing others and in a different way.
So how did you, as you were, how did you make a family when you're both in school?
Yeah, that's, that's a big question. Like we didn't know that we didn't know. So we made it. I think that was the big thing.
And if you don't have something, a roadmap laid out for you to follow, it's often easier to make your own.
Yeah. Way
if you don't have the weight of somebody else's expectations.
Yes. I think that created that space, that openness to the opportunities, the doors to open. Which before that it was all very planned. I'm like, you know, always been like that, you know, okay, yeah, I'm gonna do this and this and this and this and this. And all of a sudden learning, well, if I just do nothing, other things will happen. If I just wait, sometimes it's good to wait and other ways, other paths will open, you know, in front of you. And this is actually what happened. We came here in Ithaca for PhD in 2003. And one of the things that allowed us to come financially was an award that I got in Brazil. That just allowed us to buy my husband's ticket. And my ticket was paid by the government, by the grant that I received. But, you know, so it's almost like, yeah, the paths are being created for us. And we just have to listen and follow them, you know, as much as we can.
Right. And I'm going to make an assumption here that when you live in this way that a path will become clear, you're kind of scanning the environment around you for what's possible. And because you're scanning the environment, you are open to things, almost anything really, that could help. And when did you learn to live life with that kind of openness? How did you transition from being planful to being more opportunistic in a profound way?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a balance actually. Sure. You know, we need to be both.
That's true. Yes. But a lot of people when they move from one to take on the other, it doesn't feel very balanced.
It doesn't exactly that rhyme, and that's why that I think that's when the learning happened. I would feel okay, perhaps I moved too much to this side. Let me go back a little bit. I think another thing working after finishing PhD, I started working for a multinational agricultural company, which started to challenge skills and competencies that I didn't have. So first, like thinking, okay, wonderful. This is an opportunity to learn on the job, you know, and grow doing things. And this is, I think that was the first moment that I realized, yeah, we need to start doing things, act on. It's not just waiting for the opportunity to happen, but you know, sometimes you don't know it's an opportunity until you start.
Right.
And then things start happening, you know, and people start coming, and through relationships, you really know it's going to the right direction or not, then mm-hmm. you just shift gears. Right. So it's been like a journey. If we think, we start thinking, okay, I've been, I'm a plant breeder. So I did plant breeding and genetics, and then I need to do plant breeding and genetics in the company. And then the company just opens to you. Well, you know, not just that. What if, you know, you start leading a group of people, a small one, you know, but an implement lab, and you know, and then you start learning. Yeah, you're not just what you studied. Right? You're not just the knowledge that you get.
Right, and in behind what you were saying, what I heard, a lot of people, planning is an intellectual matter, whereas another approach to planning is to do something and see where it goes. It's almost like the difference between Bayesian statistics and other statistics. You know, you're kind of just guessing what the next thing can happen based on what just happened. But you have to have a sense of personal agency. How did you develop a sense of your own personal agency, even while you were committed to a husband and a child?
So what do you mean by personal agency?
I mean the sense that you can make a difference in your own life. You don't have to wait on opportunities to be given to you by the system or by others. That's what I mean by personal agency.
Yes.
It's empowerment, in other words.
Yeah. That's so interesting, Eric. You asked that because I think in my career, at least in the corporate world, I got into the trap of seeking for the like leadership advice or leadership guidance. And when it got to a point where I got a role which challenged me to actually don't do that, because it was the inclusion and diversity for women, and leadership would not help that, right? It would
leadership was probably the problem.
Yeah, we actually, that was created to help the leadership. Exactly. It was a committee to help leadership to act differently, to think differently and act differently in the company. And that search, by listening to stories of many different women in the company, that really changed me in a way of, you know, really realizing, well, even my own story, where is my own story in all that? Like, I know that perhaps I was nominated to be there because of my story, but I don't even understand it, you know, in a way that perhaps people are seeing that. And that was very transformative and humbling in a way that I really understood, okay, perhaps I don't know what I'm doing here.
Right. Well, and I'm going to ask this question. This may not be the right question, but what did the other women's stories teach you about your own story?
Yeah. Yeah. So I remember one powerful woman leader of a big company who was invited to give a talk to us. And I remember asking her the question, if she had to, you know, give up anything to be there where she was, you know, how hard it was to be there. And she went to tears, but still, you know, very strong and saying, yeah, well, there were birthdays of my son that I didn't go. You know, there were parts of life of her family that she could not be present in, but that was a choice. So she made a point of a choice. Then I start hearing the stories from every other woman, the same, you know, and with the same perspective of, well, is it really a true choice, or is it a choice that the system is demanding, or the culture is demanding, or the world is demanding? It really starts challenging me to see the patterns of the world, and not just in women, but in ethnicity, in races, you know, all those discussions that comes to the labeling, the trying to put people in buckets, you know, as we do to categorize things. You know, I have biology background. This is what we do in taxonomy to make knowledge easier. So to make knowledge easier.
And also to test knowledge, because the other side is making the bucket or the box, but the other piece of it is to test it and see how right or wrong you are.
Yeah, or if I understand the same thing that you understand, that's right? Yeah. Like to have a common.
Yeah.
And more I understand, while we are unique, we are so unique, it's really hard to put us into buckets, although we do that. And this is the part when it comes to empowerment, right? Really identify, well, you know what? I miss being with my family. I miss raising my kids. I really always had in my, you know, my heart, a big family. And until at that time, I only had Eric, my oldest son. And it's been, and now I have four. So like it is a choice. There's the choice part of it, but there's the calling part of it, you know, that comes before the choice. So
I want to go more deeply in this, because this seems like the one of the transformative moments of your life, or the transformative ways of your life. What music should we play right now?
Oh yeah. Yeah, let's play Wonderfully Made by Scripture Lullabies and Jay Stocker.
To give you life, you are free.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Sincha Orsi. So, what, when you started making choices, when you started to take on your own empowerment, and also, I imagine, given your role, encourage women people don't give you power, you take power. That's kind of the way power works. What did you do, and how did you have to change your relationship to the world when you became more of a choice maker and more empowered?
At that moment, I think of understanding like that from inside to really processing and, you know, get into understand my place in empowerment. I remember more like being observant.
Becoming more aware.
Yeah, it was more about understanding than actually taking any actions. The actions we were taking because it was part of the process. Then that what here it's where it comes, right? Things will happen anyway. So
right.
There is a process coming. There's a system. You are within a system. And when that started happening, it is when I felt, well, you know what? It is almost like going through a wave of things, and perhaps my time here was already gone. It is time to do something else. I think that was it was hard. I remember it was so hard because it was the moment where we were launching, you know, new initiative. It was very exciting, and there was a whole expectation of things to come. And I was so fragile in the sense that for my own empowerment, I had to change. I had to leave. Didn't happen yet by itself. It was a whole, like coming to Christ came at the same time. Mm-hmm. It was my faith being awakened.
And what about your faith made you aware that you had to change where you were working and how you were working?
Yeah, that came first, you know, like thinking mm-hmm. back, mm-hmm. because it was, I remember clearly my third daughter birthday, the day that I start to get hungry, you know, for the word, for learning more about God and Christ, and this thing of the transformation and deciding to change, to leave the company and change careers came later, a year or two later.
Right. What was the hunger?
Yeah, the hunger that it's that. So we play Wonderfully Made. And there's another song that perhaps we can play next, You'll Be in My Heart by Phil Collins. You know, when you do take care of, you know, a vulnerable thing in the baby, and you know, you have it's hard to be far, it's hard to be away, it's hard to not care. So this is what I think it's the that. It's the disposition of the heart, right? Like how much you want to be available to that, to people who all have needs and, you know, and different needs, and versus to optimize processes and systems mm-hmm. that are important for, yes, they are, but, you know, it are not congruent with my moment at that time.
Right. And not all of, so humans have needs, but we also have skills And then even the smallest child has the ability to help take care of herself or himself and help take care of the people that they're with just by how they interact. And yet the systems you're talking about seem to probably have been outside the family. So the processes that were impacting you could not be integrated with the processes that were outside the workplace.
Not at that time.
Right.
Yes, that's right. I could not see them working together. Actually, coming back here to Ithaca, that's where we saw that coming back together. My husband and I, was a family decision. And yeah, that was a key moment too, like how to integrate this different pieces, you know, of ourselves that were screaming to different directions at that time. And I think being successful at work, that's another realization, doesn't mean that you are successful in life if that kind of tension it's happening.
Right, right, right. So I'm going to take this moment to play the Phil Collins piece and then come into another set of questions.
Thank you.
Come stop your crying, it will be all right. Just take my hand, hold it tight. I will protect you from all around you. I will be here, don't you cry. For one so small, you seem so strong. My arms will hold you, keep you safe and warm. Can I will be here.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Cincha Orsi. So Cincha, how did you have to, or how did you change your change the way you worked with your husband so you could actually begin to balance these things in a different way? Because I'm inferring that there were some changes made there. What happened? How did you experience changing yourself in that process?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was, I think I just going back to your question when sure. about the opportunities, mm-hmm. right? Because when you are in a company, wanting or not, you kind of have a career path, right? You know more or less what to develop. You have kind of have directions. When I left, that was like, okay, the big opening could be, right? Now what? It could go anywhere. And that's the thing when, before leaving the company, having the awareness and the willingness to work with people to keep, you know, expand my time to be with people, but in a flexible way that I can be with my family without traveling, without being away or too concerned about work as I was before. It just, you know, brought clarity to the next step. Right? So as a coach, so get training. And at the same time, we're very grateful. My husband still had the job with Cornell. And we had the opportunity to come back here to Ithaca. And with my training, it was just a matter of changing to English, shifting from Portuguese to English and getting more used to that and see, you know, how I can help people. The interesting thing, Eric, is I think my planner's mind, you know, it would be so much easier, right? So easy. Yeah, okay, in 3 years, I will have the business going and everything, you know, back to normal to work. And no, it doesn't work like that. And God doesn't work like that. He just introduced us to the Ithaca community, which we thought we already knew from our study time, PhD time, in a different way. You know, we came to downtown and not as a student anymore, and not, I think, in the isolation of the academia, which we were during PhD. And finding my way through the city in different ways that I can, you know, learn and volunteer, and perhaps some of my skills could be used somehow. And I'm still in this process, and I found, you know, what the beautiful thing about the song as well is, and the moment we're living in, is that we only say the other is different because we're comparing to something we know, right? Someone is different from me because I'm comparing to myself. And I always had the willingness and intention to show, yeah, I am different. You know, I think this awareness that from the beginning when you introduce yourself to the world, to anybody, to any initiative you want to help, is to show how different you are in a positive, beautiful way. then it won't be different anymore. It will be part of your unique contribution.
Right. I want to try to say what I hear you saying in a slightly different way. When you lead with your differences in a way that is hopeful, you can begin to anticipate and deal more proactively with the conflict that's going to come, because there will be conflict. But we only bring something to add to the stew if we bring our differences.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, because I never expect the conflict to be a problem, but just to be part of the process, like
of life.
Yeah, that's
people of privilege expect things to be on their terms without conflict. But if you don't assume that you have privilege to be things for things to be on your terms, then you expect them to be somewhat conflictual, because you have to work out all the different needs of all the different folks and groups so that something that is equitable to all might emerge. That's my ethical sense. It may not be yours, but I see you shaking your head. Yeah. Right. And when you do that up front, it's painful for people who have a tremendous sense of privilege, like they ought to get it this way because that's the right way to do things. But it's oftentimes the most productive if we just go there first with as little fanfare as possible and as little anger as possible, because those early conflicts don't have to be, because nobody's dug in yet. And I don't know in your coaching work where that comes into play, but being creative with differences is all about learning how to show things in a different light and to fight in creative ways.
That's right. Yes, using creativity too. Yeah. Yeah. Just think differently and act differently and learn from others.
So you have become an executive coach, or just a life coach. I don't remember how you characterize yourself.
The difference, yes. Usually the executive coach is hired by a company, an organization, you know, who sponsors and has a very specific competency-based goals, you know, towards the company's goals. And the life coaching also would cover the work area of life, right? But also sees the person as a whole, you know, all areas of life, not just concentrated in what's required by a company.
Right. You talked earlier about how this has become more of a kind of a vocational calling. I don't know, that wasn't the word you used, but you, in a sense, this is an expression of your professional skills, but also of your faith.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's not limited to other people who share your faith. It's what you give to the world, from what I'm seeing. How did you go through a time of transition from seeing yourself as having a professional life versus having a vocation or a calling? And if you did, how did that change the way you show up in the world?
Yeah, I did. And I think my right now is still.
It's in process.
It's the process, yeah, of, because our passions are our passions, right? Yep. It's almost like how do
whether we want them to be or not.
So I'm almost trying to, okay, I want to listen to God's calling, but again, there's some passions that are they're so different. So I'm passionate to work with plants. And that's been, you know, my career in terms of, okay, for profession to work with plants. At the same time, I see my vocation in working with plants. But the shift came in a company that works with plants for plants and plants for humanity, that all comes back to human, to people. It's all about people and people who will steward for the plants, who will steward for Earth, for the world, and help other people, you know, to be good. And help a greater good in life. So that, and hearing the feedbacks that was a strength from me, it helped, I think, that decision to, you know, to leave the company and and to understand better that the part of my vocation, which was kind of dormant, I really put the intense focus in technology, in knowledge, in science. And it's almost like trying to balance out faith with all that. I know that it's not an end. It's just the focus right now.
When we founded Shared Journeys 25, 30 years ago, we assumed that we could, we didn't assume. What we ran into was people assumed that you could have technological fixes to healthcare-related declines. But the biggest issue isn't the technology. It's the need for people to change as their relationships change. And we are, this is going to sound extremely judgmental, and it is, but most of us are relatively incompetent at changing how we relate to those who are most dear to us. Mm-hmm. Because we've gotten attached to certain kinds of ways of being, and it's very hard to loosen the grip of those things so we can discover something new. Mm-hmm. And in your vocation, what I see that you've done is you still love plants and the environment, but you're helping people adapt to each other to do that better rather than find a technological fix.
Yeah. And it's not about, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's beautiful, because at some point in life we think, oh, technology will resolve everything, right? And I got to a point that, okay, no, it won't. It's just creating more things.
And it's creating more elites, and it's creating more specialized knowledge and people who can't communicate to each other because the technology becomes a barrier rather than a help.
So this need of relationship, sure. You know, a better relationship with ourselves, with others, with God. It's what really drives me into this vocation. I don't know if it is as a coach, you know, because coach is also in the world, like in a discussion, you know, what is the coaching profession? It's been, you know, different directions, is going to different directions. So not entering the discussion that's going on in the world, I think understanding that my vocation is to be helping, you know, people, because it is my whole journey too, you know, in this understanding of self and others and God and how we all are in this.
So let's cut to music, and then I want to come back with another set of questions. What should we play next?
Tocando em Frente by Almir Sater.
And why is this song important?
Yeah, this is a Brazilian song. I know that for the audience, that will be very different from what they used to hear. But it's a famous Brazilian song. And it's beautiful because it talks about the journey and enjoying the journey, appreciating everything life brings, the day brings, and the joy in the process of learning. Everyone has their own story, and we're, you know, just part of this whole journey together. So this is a beautiful song.
Ando devagar porque já tive pressa. Levo esse sorriso porque já chorei demais. Hoje me sinto mais forte, mais feliz, quem sabe. Só levo a certeza de que muito pouco eu sei. Eu nada sei. Conhecer as manhas e as manhãs, o sabor das massas e das maçãs. É preciso amor pra poder pulsar. É preciso paz pra poder sorrir. É preciso a chuva para florir. Penso que cumprir a vida seja simplesmente compreender a marcha e ir tocando em frente. Como um velho boiadeiro levando a boiada, eu vou tocando os dias pela longa estrada. Eu vou estrada eu sou. Conhecer as manhas e as manhãs, o sabor das massas e das maçãs. É preciso amor pra poder pulsar, é preciso paz pra poder sorrir, é preciso a chuva para florir. Todo mundo ama um dia, todo mundo chora, um dia a gente chega e o outro vai embora. Cada um de nós compõe a sua história, cada ser em si carrega o dom de ser capaz e ser conhecer as manhas e as manhãs, o sabor das massas e das maçãs. É preciso amor pra poder pulsar, é preciso paz pra poder sorrir, é preciso a chuva para florir. Ando devagar porque já tive pressa, levo esse sorriso já chorei demais. Cada um de nós compõe a sua história, cada ser em si carrega o dom de ser capaz e ser
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Cincha Orsi. One of the, where I want to go now builds on your, how you understand your place, your relationship with yourself and your relationship with the world and the universe, and whether you call it God or reality or whatever, it is that which is bigger than ourselves individually or collectively. And then one of the points of view, one of the points of the show is that our self-care is probably one of the most important things that we do, because it allows us to become more nimble, not only taking care of ourselves, but being available to others. Mm-hmm. When did you learn that self-care is an important part of your life? And then what do you do to take care of yourself intellectually, physically, emotionally?
I think it starts, for me, started with the physical first, right? The self-care, understanding the need to care for the body, you know, it's the body who will deliver the baby and, you know, and take care of. So it's, that was, I think the first manifestation of, yeah, the awareness of importance of taking care so you are well to help others and to give, and otherwise you won't be, you won't have any energy. One thing that I, because I'm very energetic and enthusiastic, I think even if I'm not exercising like routinely, as we understand, oh, do you have, you know, certain times of the, no, I'm very active anyway.
Right.
I'm always in the run, and with the kids, I think that's my life since I had kids. Yeah, last time I remember I was very active in like in martial arts. Then the kids came, you know, it was swimming, you know, it starts to be more of a milder things. And then taking care, I think, helped to take care of not just the body, but emotionally and spiritually as well. The hunger for a spiritual care, I think, came at that time when, okay, life is so crazy. Stop. What's going on? And it was amazing because I was getting sick and I didn't know, even, you know, having a nodule in my thyroid, and it disappears, gone. So some of the signs that start to appear in the body, you know, I started learning too, you know, okay, wait, watch out. And what's going on? Like, where's my care now? Am I taking care of myself? Not just the body, but emotionally, spiritually, really.
Right. But for you, the physical stress signs are the things that catch your attention or it caught does. Your attention and makes you want to reflect on what needs to change.
Right. Well, I can say that right now I don't let it get to that point.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because you've gotten better at noticing.
Yeah. That's the beautiful thing, right? More we're willing to get awareness, you know, more better we get into identifying the signs beforehand. And I think the triggers now are more emotional. And if I watch my emotions, I watch, you know, what I'm feeling, and I watch my energy levels, those are signs that perhaps, yeah, it's time to meet friends. It's time to have a prayer time and go back to Bible studies, you know, and just read the word. So those are now little signs that are happening more, or not happening more often, but perhaps my awareness is more, I'm more alert to those signs that I can, yeah, relate to them more frequently than before.
And so you've mentioned kind of the activity for physical care and your awareness of your emotional states and seeking out others and reflective spaces. How do you take care of yourself intellectually? Because, you know, with the technological background and the PhD, you are an intellectual as well as an emotional and visceral physical person.
Yes, that's the beauty. Well, about two things, right? The study of the gospel never ends. And the study, you know, the coaching never ends. And for me, the biggest coaching lessons comes from the Bible anyways. So they're very related. And in the coaching world, we have so many opportunities to keep interacting with other coaches and learning from what's going on into new discoveries in science as well, that is applied to human behaviors and ways of thinking. So it is fascinating. And reading, I like to read a lot, not just for study, like hardcore mm-hmm. study, but just, yeah, fiction and, yeah, lighter reading as well. Intellectually, it's interesting because I do think going to nature, it is an intellectual exercise. It's not just the recover and the healing part, but also of, you know, the intention of observing nature in the complexity, mm-hmm. the complexity that it shows itself. Right. So it is beautiful because it is complex. And that little thing, you know, with having the biology background, it just gets one thing to another and the curiosity to just seek for more.
Right. And my experience has been that the analytic mind of a person capable of making subtle, complex distinctions in science is exactly compatible with the analytic mind of a person who has a spiritual practice or faith in terms of the discipline. So, but it's fascinating where we develop the skills and how we work them. I want to shift gears a little bit. One of the concerns as a parent, how old are your kids?
Yeah, that's the beautiful part too. Start with the oldest. So 21, 11, 6, and 2, almost 3.
So yes, so you've got them like across 18 years.
yeah.
How has your evolution as a person, have they learned self-care earlier in life, or is it just something that they're going to have to kind of figure out on their own? Because most of us have to kind of figure it out on our own because it's part of how we become agents, individual agents empowered in this world. What observations do you have that would you be willing to share on that?
Yeah. That's a good question. I think the answer is it depends.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yes, I can get it.
It depends. on, I think each one of them are different as well. So they all like have different interests in depending on which area of self-care, you know, they care more.
Right. And a different spirit about what draws their attention.
Yes. Yeah. So I really feel my support to them is perhaps to bring more balance to, you know, what, mm-hmm. because they do tend. So I know like my oldest son, he takes care of, you know, his physical health very well, you know, so, and intellectually, I really see him perhaps going more towards that, too much to the end versus, you know, coming back. Let's come back to the heart. And then he surprises us, right? So this is my thinking of what I see going on. And then, well, he found a way, you know, his way.
In many ways, what you've just said is really the smartest. We're just called to be with them on their journeys.
Yeah. And walk along and... Yeah. And it's beautiful just to witness, just to see. And of course, like if something really we see it's troubling them and, you know, that, okay, perhaps they need a hand there, we'll mm-hmm. intervene. But if not, yeah, they'll learn.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Sincha, it has been wonderful getting to know you.
Thank you. No, it's my pleasure. It's amazing how much we learn about ourselves in this process. And my biggest hope is in this process of learning about myself, I can be more available to others. It is. It's a journey.
Yes. Right?
And yeah. We cannot walk alone. And that's the thing.
Sincha, what should we close the show with musically?
This is, yeah, these voices, they just sound beautifully together for me. it's almost like angels calling, and they speak words of hope, and it really resonates with me. They sing what I believe, that we all, like in people of all colors in a world where light will guide us, and all nations will join. To join in care for the worlds, for one another. So it's a prayer for me. So it's I Believe by Andrea Bocelli and Catherine Jenkins.
Thank you, Sincha.
Thank you.
One day I'll hear the laugh of children in a world where war has been banned.
One day I'll see men of all colors sharing words of love and devotion.
Stand up and feel the Holy Spirit. Find the power of your faith.
Open your heart,
open your heart
to those who need.
In the name of love and devotion. Yes, I believe.
I believe in the people of all nations to join and to care. Oh,
in a world where light will guide us, and giving our love will make heaven on believe in the people of all nations to join and to care for love. I believe in a world where light will guide us, and giving our love will make we'll make heaven on earth.